which a person, a young person might have in their mind, a concern about the mission field, is how do I get there from here? And we talked about that one time at another group, and I set this up, and let me go over it with you. This is before I really get into the three major discussions for the afternoon, as the panel had asked me to do, or at least the conveners. How do I get there from here? Now, we did this with a group of students. I'll learn how to go right or left on this thing. There, that's it. How do I get there, full-time work in a mission field from here, fully employed at home? And somewhere along the line, someone says, here, I hold this job. I have a wife and family, whatever it may be. I'm fully employed. I feel an exercise about the field. I just can't visualize myself walking the streets of Nairobi or whatever. How do I do that? And in order to make it a rather simple discussion, we have to set up some guidelines, assumptions. I feel a definite call to full-time work. I am not yet sure of which field. I would go directly responsible to God and my home assembly, not under a mission board. This is an assembly young person. I have not yet fully committed myself to go, quote, full-time. I have not made my exercise public or even asked advice on a confidential basis. And I have to set it up that way. You'll realize that that might not be a fully typical case, but there it was. Now, the important step, not necessarily in the order, some run simultaneously, some are in sequence. By the way, this is a very important subject because, as we said this morning, many of our young people are very much attracted to many of the faith missions, denominational missions, evangelical missions, and if they make an approach to that mission, once the contact is made, there is a sequence of events that are well ordered. And takes a lot of responsibility from the young person. They apply, they go to candidate school, whatever it may be. We'll talk about that later. But how does an assembly young person get from here to Singapore or wherever he's going? Number one, or A, keep in close touch with your assembly elders. This is fundamental. This is paramount. We've applied this morning in some of our other discussions. I won't elaborate too much on these for sake of a busy time schedule. Learn as much as possible about missions in general from secular and spiritual sources. If I am getting to be concerned about Papua New Guinea, one of the best resources is the National Geographic, as far as the secular side goes. Let's learn about it. Let's be informed about it. Let's understand something about it. There are, of course, many spiritual sources. The books I mentioned this morning, particularly from some of the assembly authors, these are all occurring over a period of time, of course. Maintain a high level of Bible study, formal and informal. Implied in there might be Bible school, might be a one-year school, might be a program at IT, it might be a three-year program, if possible, because, dear young friend, if such your presence, when you're out on the mission field, you may not have a resource library next to you. You may not even have other Christians with spiritual background that you can get consultation and advice from. And all of a sudden, you're asked to answer questions or solve problems for which you've had no experience or training, unless you have grounded yourself well. The more you can ground yourself, the better. Maintain a high level of Bible study, formal and informal. Keep busy in your local assembly and in your total spiritual life. Again, you cannot turn it on simply by getting on the plane and arriving at the other side. There's got to be, not only so, but you need to continue growing. And your step to the mission field is just the next step in that continual growing. Discipline your life toward new goals, time priority, a different financial level of living. These things can start at home before you ever get to the field. Throw the TV away to start with and a few things like that. But if this is going to be a life, then there's going to be a discipline and a set of priorities which you've perhaps never had before. And it's very important that you think in those terms. Now, when a particular field and work has become clear, not necessarily just at that point, you realize some of these can overlap, but contact the workers already present there. Largely today, young people are going out to where there's an established work. They're going out to Niankundi, they're going out to Madeyan, they're going out to places where there is perhaps a national assembly, they're going out where there are missionary workers, national workers. Contact the workers already present there. Learn as much as possible about that mission area, the language, the culture, the people, and so on. Obtain specialized training if possible. I happen to be almost useless in terms of any mechanical skill. If there's a way of doing it wrong, I'll do it. But if I had to go out to an isolated area and somebody said, inevitably you're going to have to build your own hut, I think I better go and get some manual training pretty quickly. This could be very, very important. Now, obtain a letter of commendation for your assembly. Obviously, it's not that simple. There's a lot involved there. I think you're touching on that, aren't you, Brother Ken, the commendation? I'll leave that whole area. There's a tremendous amount involved. Everything that our Brother Ken has to say, and I'm sure you'll go around it quite a bit, is in that point. I won't enlarge on it. Take the necessary steps to free yourself to move. There are a lot of steps. How about responsibilities to family, to aged parents, or something like that? How about getting your financial affairs cleaned up? How about selling a house? How about getting rid of indebtedness? On and on and on. There are many steps to take as you begin to get closer. Obtain the necessary travel documents. And we'll talk about that later. There are missionaries, there are missionary candidates going out who haven't got the travel documents and find they're held up. They haven't got clearance to get into a certain country. And somehow or other, they never got that advice. Now, then go. Where does... There's a lot said in 10 or 15 minutes, you realize. But there is no candidate board. There is no mission board. There is no accreditation that is necessary, although the more training that one can get, the better, and so on. I'm going to come back to that point a little later on. I think it'll be clear at that time. Now, where does CMML fit in to that young person going out? A, before you leave, advice, if requested, on money matters, openings on the field, etc., etc. Notice the if requested, dear friend, this afternoon. Because CMML is not a board. It is not mandatory that you have any contact with CMML. It is there to help if requested. It is more than ready to help if requested. It may even hit you on the head and say, please request it. But it is there to help if and when requested only. When you leave, assistance if needed on travel plans, arrangements, shipping belongings, and I've seen some big packing cases at CMML out there in the packing area outside the garage and so on. After you leave, the word published there must be in Swahili or something. I've got an extra L. Don't look. After you leave, publish your commendation and missions. That is, the CMML will do that. List you in the Missionary Prayer Handbook. Handle transmission of gifts if desired, etc., etc. Again, we're going to come back into that area later because it comes logically now under our three headings for the afternoon. Qualifications and training of missionaries. First of all, the needed qualifications and training. Secondly, support and service of CMML in a more expanded way than we did 2 or 3 minutes ago. And then thirdly, how to handle the unqualified applicants. First of all, the first part of that sequence, the qualifications and training of the missionary, and they're pretty obvious, but let's go over them again with some particular points we made. Related to the spirit, first of all, good Bible knowledge. That's already been implied. Again, let me stress. I had the great privilege of visiting 3 or 4 mission fields. And even though I was in the company of missionaries and others, they're so hungry to sit down and get to have a Bible discussion, ask your interpretation of a certain knotty passage and so on. And wherever I went, whether it was national Christians with whom I was able to communicate or missionaries, the Bible was open. What do you think of this? We've had a problem over that. The young missionary may go out and find himself in that situation in virtually a moment. He needs the strongest base he can in rightly dividing the word of truth. Now, number 2, or B if you like, and this might surprise you, an adoration of and obedience to God and Christ. The word adoration is in there, worship, adoration, for a particular purpose. Dear friend, I am convinced and convicted, despite everything we've all said this morning, that there is no question of the fact that one of the major ways that God calls a person in the field is a vision of that field, of the lost. How do we get that? We discussed that this morning. But there's an even higher motive, and that's a vision of the throne. This is paramount. And it's not enough simply to go out and I feel so sorry for the lost that I want to go out and help them. How about the fact that I have been so wrapped up in the worship and adoration and knowledge of the person and work of Christ and of the throne of glory that I'm going out in response to that, almost whether or not there are any lost out there at all? Now, that's a dangerous statement, but you know what I mean. And I think this is paramount. You see, who quoted Isaiah this morning? In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord high and lifted up. And then he said, here am I, send me. He saw the Lord, he didn't see the lost. He saw the throne, he didn't see the people. It wasn't in response to a call from Macedonia. It was in response to the glory of the throne. And we have the same thing, don't we, after the resurrection. And we often quote that at Easter time. Come see the place where the Lord lay, and go quickly and tell. You see the force there? The place where the Lord lay. Come and look at an empty place. Why? Because wrapped up in that view was everything to do with the fact of the finished work of Christ and his resurrection. This is the motive to drive us out to the four corners of the earth. And I would suggest to you that in related to the Spirit, where we see something of a true knowledge of worship and adoration and a practice of that by the person that is considering the field, that's a very good spiritual qualification. Then, of course, a love for the lost. That is a good motive. It's a very great motive. It should be there. But I put it in its right context, I believe. Experiences of walking with God. There's bad spelling again. Well, there it is. E, showing the fruit of the Spirit. Having spiritual gift or gifts, and I'm not going to quibble this afternoon over whether it's one or many in an individual case, but the fruits of the Spirit and the gifts of the Spirit somewhere have to be evidenced to some extent in the life of the person who is leaving the nest. And all the help and encouragement and propping up and shelter that experienced people in the home assembly can give and is going out to put his life and testimony on the line. Related to the mind, appropriate secular education and experience. We've touched on that earlier. The need to be, well, by the way, many missionaries in past years particularly have found themselves in situations where they've had to be almost diplomats to a foreign government, where they've had to show diplomacy and skill and tact and wisdom in dealing with local officials and so on and so on. This takes education and experience, even in the secular things. Qualities such as patience, resourcefulness, diplomacy, etc., obvious from what I've just said. A good intelligence level. Emotionally stable. I can remember my father many years ago sitting on the front porch of our home in Toronto, and a young man came to discuss with my dad what my dad's advice might be for him going overseas to the foreign field. And after he left, my father said, Jack, I tried to tell him not to go. He's emotionally unstable. And I tried to tell him that I did not think he would be able to handle the field. Within months of the cost and expense of getting to the field, he was back with an emotional breakdown. And I heard about that man many, many years later. His whole life had been one of instability, and it was obvious before he left. But it happened. Now, related to the body, in good health, general health, disabilities of any which will not be or become limiting factors on the field, I think it's obvious, dear brethren and sisters, that if I, for example, and I'm not, if I were suffering from the juvenile form of diabetes, I needed to have an insulin needle two or three times a day, and I get to some remote area where I can't get it, that's obviously foolish. And there are many other situations like that. Physical skills of value on the field related to the body, and that's where I fall short in many times. Now, a special note. Please let me, before somebody raises this discussion, point out, these are not all of equal weight, of course. There's no way of weighting them. Number two, they don't have to all be present. Number three, some of the greatest missionaries might not have qualified under such guidelines. Number four, some new missionaries, highly qualified, have later failed. The minute we say, if we can check everything off on the boxes down this application form, and he clears, he goes, we have made a mistake. These are guidelines, these are common sense, but every case has to be evaluated on its own, and I can't stress that too highly. Now, the ministry of CMML, someone says, I've heard young people say, instead of going out under such and such a faith mission, how do I go out under CMML? And we hasten to say, you cannot go out under CMML. CMML is not a mission board. Oh, really? Tell me the difference. You have a magazine, you have a missionary prayer handbook, you say do this and do that, and as far as I can tell, says the young person, you're the assembly mission board. Let me make this very clear, dear friend this afternoon. What are the characteristics of a mission board? They recruit, I'll say it singular, plural, doesn't matter, recruit and accept candidates, set standards of service, train and graduate candidates, commission the graduates, send them forth, supervise and direct them, control and channel their financial support, charge, transfer and recall them, retire them, charge them for services. I don't mean that in an unkindly way at all. They have to set up an office. That office has overhead and typically it could be 10%, 15%, even higher, is automatically taken out of what you might send in before it's sent on to the missionary who has gone out under that board. And then, of course, provides other supporting services, too numerous to mention, handle a bank account and so on. Now, does CMML qualify as a mission board? Well, there's the answer. Bad news. Or good news. No. There it is. Get it up there. Now, there we go. I'll get it again. I told you I wasn't too good with my hands. No, 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 no. Every one of those things is negative. Until you get to the bottom. Therefore, CMML and Embassy are only service groups, not mission boards. They do not control. They do not direct. They do not candidate. They do not qualify. They do not graduate. They do not retire. They do not transfer you from one field to another. They are simply service groups set up to offer their services to two groups, assemblies, and the people they command. Now, if the service isn't wanted, CMML can do no more. If the service is wanted, they'll provide it to the best of their ability. What are the services of CMML? My time is what, 2:45? Well, I mean, it was supposed to be. Okay, I'll hit the 2:45. What are the services of CMML? Assistance to missionaries, the handling of funds, the missionary home down at the Spring Lake, the clothing center, quite an extensive one, representations and guarantees to government, the miscellaneous visas, carnets for the transport of cars from one country to another, travel arrangements, scheduling meetings, shipping materials, etc. A tremendous amount of assistance to missionaries. Now, assistance to assemblies, represent them to governments for guarantee purposes, assist their missionaries as above, supply information for assembly meetings. I do want to clear the record this afternoon. I retired from CMML some 4 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, as I was moving some distance away, so I am not an official formal representative of CMML this afternoon. I cannot formally speak for them, but I certainly informally can because of how much I enjoyed my past association with them. So I'd like to put it in that vein. Supply information for assembly meetings, supply lists of missionaries on furlough, ministries of communication and information, CMML, MSC, MIC is the Canadian similar independent counterpart, conferences, the Missionary Prayer Handbook, Gazette Ministry, other publications, Missions Magazine, telephone, late news. By the way, there's something when we talk about the young people in the assembly getting a vision. Why not have a young person each week phone the nearest missionary information telephone service, and even if they have to write down what they hear, or take it off on a tape, and bring the tape to the assembly prayer meeting and play the tape, and have a young person do it, and they'll take an interest in it. Very, very simple practical suggestion. Telephone late news, CMML or MSC representation at conferences, or CMML or MSC planned conferences. There's been one in the past with you, and there'll be another in the future at another place. If requested again, notice, advice and counsel to missionaries, and even visits to the field. And one or two of my visits to the field were as a representative of CML, that is at their expense, they sent me out to see the field, to try to understand it, to be able to relate it better to those in the home field. Now, finally, I'm up against a rather difficult topic for which I have no answers, and it says how to handle the unqualified prospect. May I suggest to you that this gentleman at the front has no easy answer to that. I'm sure most of you don't. But there are some general points that we might well make. First of all, of course, we're dealing now with a group of assembly elders. Be in much prayer throughout the process. And it's a process, not simply one catastrophic meeting. There are some ground rules here which I don't know and I can't handle. In one sense, it should never come to this. If what we have suggested earlier has been occurring and it's been a gradually developing thought on the part of the unqualified prospect that maybe he or she had been on the mission field, at a very early stage that might have been dealt with simply. But I'm assuming here that someone has come along and perhaps it still has never received a firm, clear negative, if I can put it that way, from the elders and still is pushing and pushing and says, but I want to go to the field. And perhaps I'm stating that very poorly. But for sake of time, I'll put it that way. Be in much prayer throughout the process. Seek the confidential advice of other leaders. Sometimes an assembly may be small. The elders may not be experienced in such things. And it doesn't hurt to seek the confidential advice without naming the particular person and so on, but the general problem involved with someone of stature, a T. Ernest Wilson, a Les Rainey, so many others as they come by, or elders in another assembly, some who may have known the same person, but that destroys, of course, the confidentiality. But we don't have all the answers in any one assembly, and I've been in that position over some years as an elder in one assembly or another, and sometimes when these great problems come up, it's great to sit down. I'm Don Pilon, for example, a man I respect highly. It's great when he came through to be able to sit down with him and say, Don, such and such a problem, what's your answer? How would you deal with that? And it gives us a fresh input. Act as a group. It's always, to me, it's always been dangerous to have somebody be the spokesperson for the group. It's wise to have the group consensus present right there. The spokesperson for the group going to the individual concern then becomes sort of a mediator back and forth, and that can create difficulties. Have an agreed position, of course. Now, there's something here that you might quarrel with me about, but it's 3 D's that I've applied many times in life. Be direct, dogmatic, and diplomatic. The dogmatic doesn't mean belligerent or stubborn. I'm using it in this other sense from the word dogma or principle. Be clear on your principle. Have your principle, your dogma clear, but be direct. There's no point simply saying, well, Bill, let's not talk about it right now. Let's think about it again a few months from now. That hasn't accomplished anything, really. You've got to be direct. You've got to say, this is the time to talk about it. And then those principles, those dogmatics, if you like, have to come out. But always with that third D, diplomatic. And it's hard to be that way sometimes. You get yourself so wrought up that you're going to have to get this interview over, that you blurt out the whole thing at the beginning, and there hasn't been that establishing an environment of warmth and communication that allows a back and forth to go until you reach the desired point. It's a very difficult thing. I know, and I'm sure you do too. And then, also, suggest alternatives. Why has that individual or that couple got to that point? There must have been some exercise there. There may have been some growth there, some spiritual gift, some spiritual fruit. It may be that there are things which mean that that person could not be commanded by the assembly to go forth. But that doesn't mean it's all or nothing. There has to be an alternative. There has to be to say, but we would like to reconsider, providing we see you grow in a certain way over the next year, for example. Whatever the problems are, we'd like to see those worked out, Joe. We'd like to see those worked out, Mary. And if they are worked out along this pathway, then we'd be in a happier position to reconsider. I'm simply saying this as I go along. There are many other things which may come up. It may be something black and white, debts to be settled and so on, and or fiscal irresponsibility. And, of course, one could go on and on. If we can see changes here, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, if we can see your approach here, if we can see something different in an attitude, you've had some problems, then we're in a position. But we cannot now. That's the direct. But it's said in a diplomatic way. And I would strongly suggest provide a specific ongoing program of steps to take and review. This is only common sense. Just simply to say, let's talk about it again in 6 or 7 months. Usually, when the 6 or 7 months go by, the elders are rather reluctant, and it'll be 8, 9, 10, or 11 months. And in the meantime, you're losing somebody. And they may not be even eventually fit candidates for the mission field, but they belong to the Lord. They belong to your assembly. They're part of you. They're part of the sheep that the shepherds are trying to help. Therefore, they have tremendous value. We don't want to lose them. We want them to grow. We want them to grow to the capability to which they can grow, even if that isn't being a missionary in some part of Ecuador or Brazil or whatever it may be. Something else I like to stress, throughout the process, listen, listen, listen. Whenever we're in a position such as this, where a group of elders have to sit down with someone, they're anxious to be sure that they get their way. I say this reverently because I'm in the same position. I get the point across. I make it clear to Bill and Mary, we cannot consider them. I'm polite, hopefully diplomatic, but I finally get it all blurted out and say, we'll see you again in 6 months. If we could listen, 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 we might find things out about them which can help us, which we never knew before. To help us not only guide them better than we thought we could when the meeting started, but along the future pathway as well. We might find out, for example, someone might say, well, I guess maybe I should have made it clear that, you know, my father was a missionary and I kind of feel
that I'm disappointing him if I don't go out. Ah, that's a clue I didn't have before. That changes my whole approach to that person. I can say to him, well, how about your own life? Doesn't have to be meaningful. The Lord may have called him to be a missionary. He may not have called you. Had you thought of something else along that line? You see, if I'm not listening, I've got nothing to speak to. Listen, listen, listen. Brethren?
I'm ahead of time. Thank you very much.
Well, we have had the problem on the field from time to time of people who have been sent out who quite evidently were not called of God. Actually, I have just received a letter from a former colleague in England who tells of an assembly in England who commended a young woman to the field, and she was quite evidently not of a spiritual caliber to be called as a missionary. Actually, she has now gone over to a schismatic group, which preaches speaking in tongues and casting demons out of Christians. Maybe some Christians need demons cast out of them, but that's beside the point. I'd like to give you, we have found that there are assemblies who feel that if they can commend a person to the field, it's a kind of a lift to the assembly itself. That's not the point. We should have the Lord's work in view. Let me give you one extreme case that happened some years ago in our part of Africa. There was a young man who came out to the field, and an older brother was talking to him about some assemblies that couldn't get along with a fellow at home, so they thought they'd get rid of him by commending him to the mission field. And this young fellow responded and said, well, you know, brother, that's the way the Lord led me to the mission field. He didn't last. I don't know what's become of him. He just simply vanished. He was there for a short time, but he had a very high opinion of himself. And, of course, that's not the type of fellow that needs to go out to the mission field. I was very much impressed with what Dr. Barlow was saying this morning. You don't become a missionary when you get on the plane. And anyone who is going out as a missionary, representative of the Lord, should be one who is a really 100% godly person. If you don't establish firm rules of study and walking with the Lord while you're here in this country, you're certainly not going to develop that on the field. There are too many things that try to take a person's attention away from the Lord to, shall we say, earthly things. And one must become a really godly person and recognized as such by the elders. I should say if there's any hesitation on the part of the elders, there should no decision be made until it can be unanimous.
I think our brother's last phrase, in part, brother, answered your first question. In other words, you were saying if the group of elders have disagreement among them, I think, remember that was the question, then what can be done? And our brothers just said, if there's any hesitation, or I'll put a synonym, disagreement, then perhaps there's a lesson to be learned from it. There's also the other side, and it's rather a sad one. Sometimes that disagreement has meant that someone who should have gone to the field didn't. Not only so, but I would suggest that if a group of elders are disagreeing over that, they probably have disagreements over other things as well. And perhaps there's a divided eldership from the start, and that young man may suffer under that, or young woman, as the case may be. But the answer for the young person, I think, is to recognize that in this case the powers that be are ordained of God, and he has to walk in patience and long-suffering for a while.
I think the second question also involves two with goats. He wants to stay home, and then have a son to go.
Kind of.
That was the second question. They had five in Acts 13, and three left, and two stayed.
Well, I thought you approached that. Is there something we should have answered further, brother, that I missed?
My second question was to consider the resolution of the question of all being in prayer.
Oh, okay.
And God, not focusing upon the concern, but directing some, we may know that they were breaking themselves. And some go, but they were themselves. How does one distinguish? but from the beginning, God leading to go, and God stirring the heart of his concern, and then stay at home.
I don't know. We talked again this morning, and it's been something that's been discussed for many, many years. How do you know in a specific instance that God's will is? And this morning it was made very clear, and I'm saying it in different terms, unless we're in God's general will from our walk in life, then we're not going to have a specific will. And let's take that as for granted for a moment. But having said that, someone suggested to me years ago, and it's not a perfect answer, that for any specific pathway where I seek to have the will of God, and I know there's two sides to that as well, there are four or five things, not one of which is complete in itself. But when all four or five work in the same direction, you're beginning to see something. One which can be very faulty is circumstances. You can read into circumstances the wrong thing, but God can use them as well. Secondly, the advice and counsel, the solicited advice and counsel of spiritual friends. I go to my elders or my friends, and I express the burden to them, and I listen intently to what they say. Thirdly, the unsolicited advice and counsel of spiritual friends. And I use the word spiritual in every case. Fourthly, and this is one that means a lot, having said all that, a settled peace about the step to be taken. And more than any one thing, that's been the decisive factor. And when that point comes, there's been a decision or two in my life these last 4 or 5 years, not relative to the foreign field, and a wrestling back and forth. And the day came when there was an absolute peace. This was the step that God wanted. And to me, that was a decisive factor, having taken in mind all these other things. One other thing, dear brother, and that is that we've often said this, all of us, I'm sure you could say it better than I. Need is everywhere, but exercise has to be specific.
Can I just have something?
Certainly.
That process really does help one decide and discern God's will, but I believe it's necessary for all of us to face the possibility of going. And if we face the possibility and then we follow the guidelines, then I think the Lord will show who will stay, who will go. But it's the aspect of, Lord, okay, I'm making myself willing to go. That first question mentioned, the first question asked, I think it's something that I have done a tremendous amount of time thinking about, the unanimous support or confidence that the elders would have in commending somebody to the Lord's work, whether here or overseas. I can remember instances in our time in the Philippines where there were times of discouragement and things weren't going maybe like we thought, and there was the doubts and questions that we raised, and many times it's good to question in order to assess what you're doing. But one of the mainstays of our keeping consistently on was the confidence and unanimous trust that the elders in our commending assembly had in sending us and keeping us there. You know, we're all human. It's easy for us to our feelings and our confidence to ebb and flow at times. And it's very important that we do have the confidence of those who have commended us to the Lord's work. And that has kept us through some thick and thin times.
CML would never want, and I have to speak informally because I'm no longer part of it, they would never want to be in a position of a formal sounding board. I have to say that very carefully. On the other hand, advice and counsel is available, and more than once has occurred, many, many times. And something I forgot to say earlier in this connection is, I said, if requested to advise and counsel, I would recommend, dear brother, above everything else, that if CML has any value at all, and young people are beginning to think about the mission field, if it's possible, get them up to visit CMML. And to understand what's available. And not only that, but there will always be missionaries in residence. Because sometimes there's many as 10 or 15 there. Sometimes perhaps only a couple. And it's a delightful thing to be able to talk to Sam Robinson and John Jeffers and others about the mission field and then go and visit some of the missionaries right there.
What is the panel would evaluate the very commonly expressed proposition that a commendation of a worker not looking to the assembly financially is legitimate, and then the person doesn't to stand behind that person to some extent financially, at least share. In first place, of course, that sounds very, very good and very scriptural and very responsible. It could become the situation where an assembly is totally committed financially and can't take on another worker, and then turns down a worker because they think that they can't meet that responsibility. If we hold a doctrine like that, are we denying the principle of going out on faith and the right of the Lord to call somebody from our own name?
It's possible. Can you hold that back to the next session? Because I think our final rhythm is going to address that in the next session.
Thank you, Dennis. Thank you, Dennis. It's a different panel. I'm off that one. But Brother Starr, I really respect and commend the question. It was a very, very good one. I'm sure you'll be dealing with it again one way or the other. Thanks, Jim.
Very good question. Yes. Perhaps
one of the brethren
can
answer this question much better than the one. Why is it that BML is so adamant about transferring or adding on funds for a national
I'll respond to that, but our brother is itching here too. The brother.
That must be done very carefully, because we know, for instance, in Zambia, there are African workers who want to receive the funds that the missionary is receiving, and they want those funds not because they are anxious to carry on the work, but because they would like those funds. One must be very, very careful about sending funds to any African who asks for funds particularly. That is happening.
We didn't have that in mind so much, as we know there are many Christians now in the United States from various other countries who are saved in India or wherever. They are in this country earning good salaries. They want to think of their own people, their own community, and the brethren are legitimate. Let's assume they are legitimate and not money grabbers or takers or anything like that. And yet the MML will not, I understand, I could be wrong, but I understand they will not transmit funds to those national workers.
That's a difficult question. I know that it's hard for us to know the ins and outs overseas. And I know that if somebody sends funds for India, for example, we will only send it to Gospel Fellowship Trust Visit in India, because we know something of that, and we know that it will be properly serviced through. But remember that the charter, if you like, of CML, is to serve the assemblies and the missionaries commended by them. And we have to restrict it pretty well to that. Thank you, Brother Clark.
One possible answer to that would be for that person, if they know the individual there or know the assembly, would be to give through their assembly to that assembly.
That's correct.
Well, about funds for African workers, we know of one case in Angola where funds were left for a certain African worker, but the African worker was no longer in the assembly fellowship.
And we've had a very challenging minister this morning. I'm sure there are some questions that have not been asked, if you'd like to ask. And here's a group that's ready to answer. Any questions at all? Yes.
I've got a third one. Father, I'm not that deep in Carbondale, Illinois. I have contact not only with citizens who are from among the assembly, but many Christian people. I had the opportunity to communicate New Testament principles to a number of them. Many who have not come from among the assembly have loved those principles and desire many ways to follow them. But then comes to, at least from their perspective, a call to the
mission field. And it is obvious from talking with them that they know not yet sufficient to do the ministry. And yet they very rapidly refer to some of these other bodies, to the board and the secondary spirit organization, and speak to their support. Our question is, what practical steps should we take to counsel these young people to wait and grow the things on before they go? The question is, what practical things can be done?
I'd like to share on that because I guess I went through the process in the sense that, after college, my wife and I were very interested in going to the field, but worked for a while in a secular job and put our efforts into an assembly work and asked the elders to guide us in those responsibilities. And then over a period of time came to them and said, "You see areas we need to improve. What guidelines should you give us?" And in our particular case, we were wanting to go back to the Philippines. I was born in the Philippines, and my folks were there at that time. I'm sure the elders there could have pointed to many areas in our lives and given us advice and given us other directions. But they also realized that one can train forever. And they held respect for those that were on the field, that we would go and work alongside with some who are veterans on the field. So there was a balance of our input on this end, of the practical work, and their watching of what we did. And it wasn't that we attained a particular plateau, I don't think, before we went, because this is all a process of learning and growth. But then they were willing to turn us loose and go and work with someone who had experience. And I think in the Lord's work, the hardest thing is to feel that you're at a point where you have it. You have a handle on things. I do Bible translation. The hardest thing is to let that translation go and be published because you always think you can improve it. And I think many times we have to have that balance. Sure, we have input and guidance, but we have to realize that it's an on-the-job training also, that once we get to the field, there should be somebody there who can help and guide and continue in that process. So we were very thankful for that direction that the elders gave us as we were preparing to go.
May I sort of butt in here with one suggestion that I would like to make for candidates for the field? Unfortunately, our American education today is very, very poor, as no doubt you know. We're getting folks coming out to the field who don't know even English grammar. They don't know what an adverb is. They don't know what an adjective is. In fact, I had one worker tell me, "Mr. Horton, when you talk about an adverb, I don't know what you're talking about." And the situation has become rather serious. Miss White, Alice White of Chavuma, and my wife and I were writing a grammar of the Lavalley language. She said, "Put a glossary in the back of the grammar telling what grammatical terms mean." And one of the things we had to do was to put in this glossary telling what a noun is and giving examples of its use, what a verb is and giving examples, because we have certain special grammatical terms for the Lavalley language that we don't have in English. But the trouble is that some of the people didn't even know English grammatical terms. And that we had to, may I say that I would suggest anybody who is thinking of going to the field get a grounding in English grammar. And also another thing, get some grounding in language principles. English is not the norm by which other languages are to be judged. And some people come out to the field and never get that through their heads. Wycliffe Bible Translators, I understand, has an excellent language school. And if possible, a missionary candidate should get some grounding in elementary language principles before going out the field. And that will solve a lot of the trouble of learning languages.
I think this process of training is one where assembly missionaries have been very, very poor. The preparation for what they're going to do or the people they're going to work with on the field. And as our brother mentioned, SIL has a good summer program. Their course is IT. There's another new one that started in Florida, and one of the men on that team that trains missionaries is a commanded worker from Canada. And his letter of commendation was in a recent interest magazine, Les Plett. And this particular group takes a missionary or somebody wanting to go to the field for a year, works with them 6 months here in the States, and then takes them to the islands in the Caribbean, Belize. Am I right? Belize? I don't know what your island it is, but they spend 6 months working in, it's actually an English country, English-speaking country, but it's a different dialect and a different culture. And they have a year where they train people. So this is one area I feel that is very necessary, and I hear many who are on the field say, I wish I had a little more cross-cultural training before I came. Most mission organizations have that all set up. We sometimes tend to think that will just come mystically or whatever as we get there.
Very good.
Yeah, I'd like to just ask Captain Kevin if he would address this whole issue a little bit, because I know they're very committed to this whole issue of preparing before you go to a certain degree. And I'd like to just ask Kevin Dyer if he would also mention how qualified are the young people that you are getting, and what is the dropout rate versus those that, as Craig suggested, mature and work through some maturing and are able through the missionary experience to go on and develop. And talk a little bit, Kevin, maybe about your training and how important you feel that is.
We're very committed to the training aspect before somebody goes, simply because it has tremendous influence in helping a person succeed when he gets a mission to that. Our missionary dropout rate on the mission field is 4%. Probably the lowest rate of any missionary group in North America today. And we attribute it to the fact that we have a heavy training program. Our training consists of language study, and we can give a test to find out their ability before to know whether they're going to be able to learn the language. And then we have an intense training program, which is the equivalent of 2.5 years of language study in 6 months. And after that, we have a clear idea of how successful they're going to be. And then learning to adapt to another culture. Very important, very important. There are simply some people that cannot adapt easily. And the third thing which we find is crucial is learning to get along with other people. We have hundreds of missionaries today who cannot get along. I mean, we have tremendous problems on the mission field today because of personality conflict. And we deal with those. That's probably the most significant thing we're doing.
Answer my question. Suppose if a young couple in our assembly that is really exercised about a particular field of service and wants to be commended, do you provide that sort of preparation without them not necessarily going through with the IT program and staying with you after a training period? Is that open? Is that available?
Well, it depends on the languages. One of the keys to that program is languages. We only teach so many languages each year. And if somebody wants to go and learn Zulu or something, we would be teaching Zulu, perhaps. So there are distinctions in that whole area. But yes, we're open to helping assemblies and training their young people. So I am convinced it's very, very important. This was mentioned this morning, but Roland Hill had a mission training program back in 1919. He ran it for 7 years. Did you go through Brother Horton? Brother Horton went through it. Cyril Brooks. Orlando Brooks and many of the federal missionaries today went through that training program. We dropped it in 1927, never started doing fighting until 1960 when we began again. And yet, I believe it's a crucial part of our preparation for people to serve the Lord effectively. Not only that, grounding them in principles for the establishing of New Testament assembly, very important. And teaching them how to do it in a cross-cultural way. All of those issues are struggle with and work for the
Okay. You go first.
I omitted to say earlier tonight that although it was touched on and Kevin has reminded me, grounding them in the principles of what we teach in the assemblies. And you know, the whole basic point is this. What is the total picture? It's to get, and I use in those terms advisedly, of course, to go out to far field to get people saved. Now, the Lord does the saving, I realize that, but we go out to be part of that evangelistic thing. But Number two, to build those individuals in their faith, the teaching has to follow. And the great need in the mission field today is teachers, not necessarily pioneer evangelists in many, many areas of the field. But then number three, to group them together in a local New Testament church, which is a representation of the New Testament church that the missionary left back home, because he was commanded to reproduce that which he knew back home, not something different. And not only so, but to see that church eventually be a sending church as well. So there's really four steps in it. And again, I wanted to make this clear. One of the great tragedies is the high percentage of young people from assemblies who are going to these other mission groups. They're going out under that and are not allowed, of course, to reproduce New Testament assemblies as we know them. And they're lost to the movement. They're lost to us. Now, if everything we've said today has any bearing in truth at all, it's obviously that people who would fulfill some of those qualifications which we listed so cursorily would be some of the very choicest. And if some of the very choicest are leaving us to go to other groups and going out in the field where they cannot reproduce the home from which they came spiritually, it's a tragedy. And many of our assemblies today are encouraging that by having these other groups in to give their programs.
Because of the people seeing that many are going into more structured mission organizations, Jerry Stiles was very concerned about a retreat geared toward explaining the process of commendation and going from an assembly. And April 18, Jerry Stiles and I will be at Alethea Springs for a retreat for college and career age young people, just to present to them the process that we feel, you know, the Lord intended us to go through. So that'll be an opportunity if anyone would like to send any young people to that.